3CR would like to acknowledge the Kulin Nation, true owners, caretakers, and custodians of the land from which we broadcast. 3CR pays respect to elders past and present of the Kulin Nation. We recognize their unceded sovereignty.
This is 3CR Breakfast.
Oh, yeah.
Alternative news, analysis, and current affairs. Monday to Friday, 7 a.m. to 8:30 a.m.
Only double.
Clap your hands.
Good morning, listeners. You're on the Monday Breakfast Show with Hannah and Rob.
Good morning.
Good morning.
It's so rainy out there.
It is.
It was kind of nice to hear it, like in the background last night.
Yeah.
Anyway, I hope everyone has been staying dry over the past like day or so. It was really nice on Saturday.
It was beautiful.
There was like a period of maybe 90 minutes where I was wearing shorts.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was nice and sunshine.
And the most, this might be really interesting, funny to you, Hannah, but something really interesting happened to me yesterday.
Okay.
The most Rob thing to happen to Rob. I was at the gym, right?
Mm-hmm.
And while I'm lifting weights, I look down and my gym's in like an industrial estate in Coburg North.
Yeah.
And it's usually just like the locals around there, right? And I go to a cafe beforehand and I see these maybe like 15-year-old kids with like denim jackets, patches on, like all the like the punk paraphernalia, and like full Liberty spikes, you know, like huge spikes of hair that are gelled up.
Love that.
And like one of them's dyed red. I'm like, what? Like, this is like just, you know, kind of random to see. Like, it's not usually the type of people I see in Coburg North. Not that that's a bad thing. And then I go to the gym and I'm on the first floor and I just keep seeing all of these like young alternative people. And I'm like, something must be going on. So now I leave the gym, right? And yeah, as I said, it's in an industrial estate. There's a bunch of these buildings.
Little punk show.
Yeah, and there's a little punk show. And then like there's all these like little 14-year-olds with like full black metal beats.
That's so sick.
It was just amazing. So I lifted weights and then immediately after I was in a crowd of like teenagers just like listening to heavy metal.
Aww.
On a Sunday afternoon, and it was so beautiful.
The kids are going to be all right,
The
guys.
Kids are going to be all right.
Kids have Liberty spikes. Everything is okay.
Should we quickly talk about what's coming up on today's show?
Sure. Did you watch the band with the kids?
Yeah, I watched a few of the bands. I actually saw one of my friends and their boyfriend plays in a band called Blood on My Hands. I'm told that Horsepower were also there, which I really like their music. But I completely missed it. I didn't even know this was happening. It's a new venue, apparently.
Nice.
All ages venue in Coburg North, which is sick.
Hell yeah. Love to see all the new DIY venues in
there. Yeah. I love it so much. And I love an all ages punk show.
Yeah.
Truly. And one of the bands gave me a record for free. Like a 7-inch vinyl.
Wow.
So shout out to Taking Care of Business for giving me a 7-inch vinyl for free.
I love that.
And a little bag, not like a tote bag. No, there's like drawstring ones.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. I remember going to all ages punk and metal shows at the Footscray Youth Centre when I was
yes.
like 13.
I think my first ever punk gig was there.
True.
When I was like 14, and I went with my dad,
cute.
Who's this like, you know, working class English punk, and he was so like, he was so happy that his child was going to events at like 14.
Yeah,
he was so happy.
So cute.
But they just don't. They don't like. Their idea of what moshing is very different to what our idea of moshing is.
Yeah, I remember being so little, like, watching the mosh. But it was only, like, 15 people in a small room in, like, a neighborhood house. Just, like, going sick.
Just throwing limbs everywhere and stuff.
Yeah. So funny. So good.
Yeah, so that was a really nice end to my weekend.
That's lovely.
And I'm, yeah, really, like, warmed by the fact that they're little 14-year-old kids doing full black metal face paint on a Sunday afternoon.
As they should.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the show, hey?
Yeah.
So we've got our regular segment, the Wing Beats Per Minute, once again, which... Yeah, I'm really excited to hear about that. This week they're talking about flowering eucalyptus gums.
Yes.
So cool.
So exciting.
The one of my housemate has an orchid which is flowering.
Pretty.
An indigenous orchid which is flowering, which means ghouling season has officially started.
Love that.
Which is really cool. We're also going to play a segment from yesterday's Out of the Pan, talking about the upcoming census. As many of you will know, it's the first time that the census will include questions about gender and sexuality. So we'll hear Sally Goldner talking about that, as well as the lack of inclusion of questions about variations in sex characteristics. And following that, we're going to hear a little segment from back in May, from Uprise Radio back in May, talking about Palantir and the manifesto that they released earlier this year, especially given that, you know, the Victorian government and companies and even the federal government, so many places have continued to sign documents with Palantir. Even after this manifesto was released, and yeah, I think it's important to replay part of the conversation that they had about the manifesto, just because it's the things that they're brazenly writing and publishing to the internet are pretty whack. Yeah.
And then the last two segments on the show, we're going to be bringing you an excerpt of the first episode of the new podcast by the Center Against Racial Profiling. The series is called The People's Record, and they had the launch of this series 2 days ago on Saturday, with this episode being about growing up and community in the flats, and first experience of policing histories of racial police violence in so-called Australia, and traditions of community resistance. Half of the series is out now at 3cr.org.au/thepeoplesrecord, and the second half of the series, the last three episodes, will be coming soon. I'm really excited to listen to
that. Me too.
It looks amazing. And then last up on the show, we're going to be joined live by Karen and Kelly from the Action Network. They're going to be telling us about an upcoming rally on Wednesday, protesting the amendments to the Correction Act, and what that means for people in prison.
That's the legislation that wants to limit the amount of time people in prison spend outside, right?
Yes.
They want to... There's a... What is it? It's 1 hour currently. And they want to take that away. Is that right?
I think they want it to be they maximum want it to be 1 hour. Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
But yeah, they'll be telling us more about that. And yeah.
That's happening at 8:15.
Yeah.
Cool.
Cool. Well, stay tuned for headlines.
Some folks know about it, some don't. Some will learn to shout it, some won't. But sooner or later, baby, here's a ditty. Say you're gonna have to get right down to the real nitty gritty. Let's get right down to the real nitty gritty now. One. Ooh.
These are the news headlines for Monday, the 10th of August. In Victoria, WA, Queensland, Tasmania, and the ACT, you can be imprisoned for unpaid fines. This is often from parking fines or tolls that have increased over time. The Victorian government has recently extended a pause in enforcing warrant of imprisonment for unpaid fines for another 2 months, but this is without permanent change. A number of legal and human rights organisations have called for this to be permanently stopped, especially due to the several deaths in custody of people who were imprisoned for being unable to pay a fine. In Victoria alone, there are more than 2,500 people subject to an imprisonment warrant due to unpaid fines, sometimes being from a decade previous. In New South Wales, South Australia, and the Northern Territory, you cannot be imprisoned for unpaid fines. In a Melbourne community legal managing lawyer and member of the Fines Infringement Working Group, Shifra Bluestein said, quote, "We don't think anyone should be imprisoned for not paying fines," end quote. "We also think that just threatening to imprison people is enough to cause serious harm," end quote.
That's so scary. And that is, I mean, this is a thing that just doesn't happen to people who are rich. And so it's basically just enforcing poverty. Anyways, in other news this week, the New South Wales Supreme Court has rejected a push to place a terrorism supervision order onto a young Sydney man, with the prosecution falsely conflating criticism of Israel as anti-Semitic. Mohammed Fahad pled guilty to offences of defacing property and cars with the slogans F Israel and PKK coming, receiving a subsequent sentence of 1 year and 8 months in prison. Prosecutor Patricia McDonald SC argued that these actions, along with material found on his phone, constituted Fahad as an extremist. The material found on his phone was discussion of Hezbollah, the killing of its leader Hassan Nasrallah, as well as anger towards Israel's actions in Lebanon. Justice Desmond Fagan rejected this argument with a ruling that the prosecution was, quote, "treating all Jews as monolithic," end quote, and that, quote, "it's quite wrong to treat all Jews as supporting Israel because they don't, but you treat a statement of hostility to Israel as a statement of hostility to the Jewish people, which it is not," end quote. The ruling is significant as institutions and governments across the continent and across the globe continue to adopt the infamous IHRA definition of anti-Semitism, which defines any criticism of Israel as inherently anti-Semitic, the latest institution of which being the Australian Health Practitioner Regulation Agency. The prosecution also used the defendant's attendance of pro-Palestine rallies as evidence towards their case, which was additionally rejected by Justice Fagan, given the, quote, 79% of Australians which have an unfavourable view of Israel, end quote, according to polling by the Pew Research Centre, and also the fact that thousands of people have attended pro-Palestine rallies across the continent over the last 3 years. These have been the news headlines for Monday, the 10th of August. You're listening to 3CR Community Radio.
Always bringing you the latest union news.
They're coming after us at the moment. They want to get rid of penalty rates, the big push from businesses. They want to get rid of all the things that you and I have fought for.
So there's tens of thousands of jobs gone, contracted out to sham contracting arrangements.
On 8:55 a.m. and on the web, 3cr.org.au.
3CR would like to thank our sponsors, Earth Greetings, cards that connect, care, and celebrate. Support wildlife and habitat with every purchase. Inspired by nature, giving back to the planet. Learn more at earthgreetings.com.au.
You're listening to 3CR, an apartheid-free zone. 3CR's Committee of Management has passed a declaration formalising our commitment to a free Palestine. As an apartheid-free zone, we're committed to boycotting Israel's regime of oppression. We stand firmly against apartheid in Palestine and encourage other organisations to join us in this struggle. Visit our website to read the full declaration and learn more about our commitment to justice and liberation for Palestine and the apartheid-free zone movement.
You're listening to the Monday Breakfast Show on 3CR. First up on the show, we're going to be listening to an ongoing segment that we have here on the show, Wing Beats Per Minute, where two conservationists, Jared and Michael, talk about the importance that insects have on ecosystems. And today's episode slash show will be about flowering eucalyptus gums. Stay tuned.
Insects and music, you can't refuse it. It's time to choose it before we lose it. 90 boom at 120 half. Wing beats per minute happen so fast.
Wing beats per minute. Wing beats per minute.
Welcome to another episode of Wing Beats Per Minute with myself, Michael Smith, and Jared Geddes, where we talk about ecological issues with a focus on insects. And then we have a tenuous link, which is a musical track that links into something we've spoken about in the show. Mate, over the last couple of months, we've seen some eucalypt species flowering en masse, and it's been particularly good for a range of different animal species that have been able to come in and feed on the flowers.
Yeah, it was very exciting the other day. We went out to Plenty Gorge and the yellow gums are flowering en masse out there, and we got to see the absolutely beautiful swift parrots, which is, it's been a long time since I've seen them, and I was just reminded of how beautiful they are and how just incredible they are in flight.
Yeah, I mean, the speed of them, mate. I had to look it up because I saw them flying so swift, turning on a dime to get between these massive yellow gums that look like they could be 200 years plus old. And they can fly at 90 kilometers per hour, which to me is mind-boggling.
That's incredible, isn't it? That's so fast. But they come across from Tasmania, across Bass Strait, so you can imagine they sort of need to shoot along like that, don't they?
Yeah, absolutely. If they're going at 90 that whole distance, that's pretty impressive. And they're certainly loading up on food over here. Those yellow gum trees have fairly large flowers, and they'd be getting lots of nectar and pollen. And the other thing I noticed was they're actually eating lerps. So what a lerp is a psyllid insect creates this coating over the top to try and protect itself from other animals. But over evolution, the animals have figured out that the sugary substance is really tasty. And some birds will eat the sugary coating and the insect. The problem comes when you get minor birds that only eat the sugary coating. The insect remains and then it starts defoliating the trees. So that's one of the main reasons that minors are bad, because they bully the other birds away that can't feed on them, and then they don't eat the insect.
I found it interesting there at Plenty Gorge, because there's this really large stands of very old yellow gum trees, and that was dominated by the wattle birds and the rainbow lorikeets and these sort of more aggressive birds, where the swifties were off on the periphery a bit more next to a paddock area, and they seem to be quite happy there. Like, I think they might be pushed away from the cream of the crop, so to speak, from the big yellow gums.
Yeah, well, it certainly helps, I believe, and I don't know this to be absolutely true, that they hang in a group. But it didn't take long for a wattle bird to swoop into a tree, then suddenly that whole group was moving away. So just because an animal is native doesn't mean that it's doing great things all the time, because the Wattlebird numbers have just increased exponentially, it would seem, just because they, I think, because they can get food all year round, because people are planting, you know, New South Wales wattles and other plants, you know, in their yards, and so they continually have this consistent food source.
Yeah, they go for the bottle brushes and the grevilleas and things like that, which, yeah, we've planted in our backyards and roadsides and things like that. So they do have a lot of food for them. Yeah. And they're very good at bullying other birds away.
Yeah, it's not just the miners, you know, it's actually the wattlebirds as well. And if, you know, when we go to our Bulwich Reserve and they've got those massive, you know, remnant ironbarks there, and the most common bird you hear there is the red wattlebird. Occasionally you might get a tufted honey eater. And there are a few other honey eaters there.
You get little gangs coming through, don't you? They have to sort of come through in gangs and get what they can and then get out.
Yeah, well, the white-naped honey eater often hangs in a little group, so they might be able to hang in there for a bit before the wattlebird comes along. But like the white-eared honey eater, that's usually, to my knowledge, hanging on its lonesome, so to speak.
Yeah.
And, that would get moved on pretty quickly. Worth noting that when you see a range of different honey eater birds in the flowering iron barks, they're not just going for the flowers. So there'll be insects that are attracted to the flowers, and then the honey eaters, which at some times of the year can predominantly eat insects, might be picking off insects as they're doing it. And I think what they're actually also doing is getting an insect from one leaf, then getting a bit of nectar from a flower as they're moving along from plant to plant.
So they'll be getting protein from the insects and then the sugar from the flowers.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think they're getting, like, you know, you can talk about CHO or, you know, pasta or a lolly. And then for the protein, they're getting the equivalent of chickpeas and lentils for us humans.
The first time I saw swift parrots was in Hurstbridge, which was such a great surprise. There ended up being a flock of around 60 to 80 there, and they were feeding on the manigums flowering, and it was just such a joy to see them in the local area.
And I remember before the swift parrots arrived in Hurstbridge, the manigums were flowering, and just appeared to be like thousands upon thousands of flowers in the one giant manigum. And it was about sort of February, March, and the musk lorikeets were just raucous. They were just loving all those flowers, and the flowers actually dropping to the ground. So if you looked at the base of some of these manigums, you would get an indication that something has been feeding, you know, up in the canopy.
It was amazing to see them down by the creek, a whole group of them roosting on a dead stag, a dead tree, and then they would all take off together and do these wonderful laps around the Hurstbridge area.
Yeah, well, that's kind of what we were seeing this year at Yellow Gum Park as well. They would do these laps, and when they left, you wouldn't go and search them. You'd stay in your one spot, and you could almost predict that they would come back and feed in the same tree, so long as there wasn't some sort of, you know, wattle bird trying to aggressively have a go at them. So it was quite a pleasant experience because you didn't have to move around too much.
Yeah, you could just stand there and track them through the air. It was just, yeah, beautiful, wasn't it?
In East Gippsland in July, the ironbarks have been flowering en masse. And this is one species, to my knowledge, that seems to flower en masse quite regularly, whereas other species of eucalypts like redbox might flower en masse sort of once every 5 to 10 years.
It's an important species that flower in wintertime.
Absolutely, yeah, when there's not a lot of nectar from herbaceous understory plants and midstory plants.
Definitely.
A lot of the honey eaters and the gliders can feed up there. So the yellow-bellied gliders will at night time go to these flowers and the ironbarks and they'll feed on them, whereas usually they'd be making incisions in like mountain grey gums or trying to strip the bark back in stringy barks to get at the gum. So it's really important food source in winter for not only birds and insects but also gliders.
Yeah, wow, that's amazing. What's another bird that's an itinerant one that you might see every now and again, like every few years or something?
Well, in East Gippsland, the scarlet honeyeater seems to be sort of permanently stationed down there. But in the Nillarbit Shire, when there's certain circumstances happening in, say, New South Wales or in the Gippsland area, like a drought.
Yeah, or bushfire.
Or bushfire, and trees therefore can't really flower en masse the same as they usually would. Somehow the scarlet honeyeater has known that the red box has been flowering en masse. And since I've been in Australia, the red box has flowered en masse twice. And the scarlet honeyeater has had those circumstances where it usually lives, not so good for it, have known to fly down and then be in Melbourne for the red box and can feed on the flowers, which is just amazing.
I wonder if they follow the flowers across the landscape then that brings them down to Melbourne. They're obviously, a big motivation is that they're hungry.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm sure they're feeding as, you know, as they go. And then they're like, well, I can't stay here forever. I need to keep tracking until I come across a massive big stand of trees. And in Nillarbik, there's so many redbox on those drier slopes and, you know, hundreds if not thousands of flowers on each individual tree. And it's just such a joy to hear the scarlet honeyeater call. It's, I think I was looking it up the other day. They've got like this six-note call, which is just so miraculous to listen to. It's you know, so complex and so beautiful and melodic to listen to.
It's that time of the episode where we introduce a track to be played with a link to the show. And whilst the show is predominantly about insects, today a huge focus was on the role flowering gums play in forest ecosystems for not only insects, but also birds and gliders. So we thought we'd play a track by the birds. This track is called Turn, Turn, Turn.
Help 3CR raise funds by donating your containers. Every eligible drink container that you return to a container deposit scheme recycling point earns 10 cents, which can really add up. 3CR is a donation partner for Victoria's Container Deposit Scheme. The scheme allows you to recycle selected aluminium, glass, or plastic containers and donate the funds earned to a not-for-profit organisation of your choice. Help us raise funds for the station. Search for Community Radio and choose 3CR next time you cash in your cans. Go to cdsvic.org.au for more information.
Season turn, turn, turn.
You're listening to the Monday Breakfast Show on 3CR Community Radio. That song was Turn, Turn, Turn by The Birds, as recommended by Michael and Jared from the Wing Beats Per Minute segment, which you heard before that song, which is, if you're not familiar, it's a regular segment here on the Monday Breakfast Show. And this month they were talking about flowering eucalyptus gums. Now we're going to hear a segment from yesterday's Out of the Pan, in which Sally Goldner is talking about the upcoming census and the inclusion of gender and sexuality questions, but a lack of questions about variations in sex characteristics. Stay tuned.
Because on Tuesday night, we all have to fill out the form, as they used to say, because it is census time. And of huge relevance to the rainbow communities is inclusion in the census for some. And this is where I am a grumpy panda, because we've really only scored roughly, in my opinion, 2 out of 6, so to speak. What do I mean by that? People over 16 will be able to disclose their sexual orientation and gender identity. That is incredibly welcome. It will give us that information. We'll find out exactly where people live. Will we get exact numbers? I mean, let's look at something. There will be, and I'll just start with the, I'll call it in simple terms, the adult age bracket. Some people might not be willing to disclose, still living in the proverbial in stealth or in hiding. Some people might be afraid to, for whatever reason. But I think that the privacy concerns are being reasonably well addressed. And if you are someone, in a shared household, and you want to get your own particular form, you can do that. So I think that's incredibly welcome. And the questions on sex and gender from a trans and gender diverse perspective are good. But, with apologies to Meatloaf, 2 out of 6 is bad, because for anyone under 16, they cannot disclose sexual orientation and gender identity. Gee, I wonder if someone was worried about fundamentalist Christians. Influencing the government. Oh, no, we can't be influencing the children. Who's looking after the children? Well, we won't be in this country for another 5 years if we don't count sexual orientation and gender identity of children. And I just think it was really poor that that was left out. But even poorer, in my opinion, is what's happened with people with variation of sex characteristics not included at all. And this is what I really wanted to focus on. I will say I've heard differing opinions on why it didn't happen. I've heard some statistical types say they couldn't get a question that would be answered, significant variation, a statistical variation because of the wording. Now, I am a person who is endo, E-N-D-O sex. As far as I know, my sex characteristics fitted expectations for male and female at birth. And I'm just, I'm going to do my best to be an ally. But looking at the website for interaction, the national body for health and human rights in Australia for people with variation of sex characteristics, and I'm just trying to get to the exact page now to get the definition that they use for intersex, they have used in one part of their website, said that people knowing that they were born with variation of sex characteristics, that's really important. And so I think that the critical factor is born. Now, no one should have to prove themselves. We don't ask endosex people to prove themselves. We don't ask people whose gender identity fits societal expectations. I'm being very quick and dirty there with my definition for gender identity. And we don't ask cisgender people to prove themselves. We don't ask heterosexual people to prove themselves. But the thing is, you know, people with variation of sex characteristics know they're there. Your chromosomes and genes obviously are there from birth. And if you therefore have an identifiable variation of sex characteristics, whether genetic, chromosomal, or whether it was visible bodily variation, it's intersex. So I don't understand why it was so hard to get the right definition. Now, I know that in the past there have been some people who, and I'm wanting to be careful here, who many people might classify, put under trans, but also endosex, who have said, no, my being trans is a variation of sex characteristics. Now, I respect that, the right to that opinion, but, it hasn't unfortunately been proven, as much as I hate that, as yet. And you don't know you're born with it. We most likely are. We don't become trans any more than we suddenly become, in terms of sexual orientation, gay, lesbian, or bisexual. But I think a definition that says something like a known, born with a known variation of sex characteristics could have worked. And therefore, I can't buy into the statistical variation thing. The other allegation I've heard is that there was the proverbial captain's call by Prime Minister Anthony Albanese. And I don't think that's good enough either. I have heard repeatedly that Anthony Albanese, I've heard from, I'm going to say, at least two sources, that Albanese stopped learning about the rainbow communities around 2003, and from very conservative people who sort of didn't really go past gay and lesbian, which is why many people believe at times groups like trans and intersex, and to some extent bi plus and ace, have been ignored by the Prime Minister. And I don't think that's good enough that it came down to him. Now, the thing is, you could say, well, there's a saying, what can you do about the things that are in your control? Well, I am quite confident that people with variation of sex characteristics, including obviously people from interaction, would have advocated very, very hard for intersex inclusion. We know they did. So what broke down? Is there a problem with our lobbying? Do we not only have a very few limited people from rainbow communities who are getting access to key people in government and public sector? Are we having, endosex people trying to do the definition? I don't know that, the answers to that. Maybe we'll find out some more as time goes on. But I think I can want to say, most of all, I totally affirm the absolute disappointment, sadness, frustration, and other feelings of people with variation of sex characteristics that they're not being counted in the census. It is really quite disconcerting that that is the case and not good enough. And there's a breakdown somewhere between people with variation of sex characteristics and their good advocacy, which I honestly say people with variation of sex characteristics do very, very well. And the fact that this information is not getting up to the top levels of national government. And when you look at the advances that have been made by people with variation of sex characteristics, such as the ACT laws of 2023 and the Victorian ones of this year, you can get through to government, and it can happen that those two states and territories, and we've got six more to go, where intersex is being viewed somewhat favourably. Well, as they say, Houston, we have a problem. How we solve it, I don't know, but I'd love to find out if there are people in the know with variation of sex characteristics. Love to hear from you. And complimenting some good community radio, the program The Eye in Us, which covers intersex issues on Joy 94.9. Maybe they have the answers if they're out there listening. Who knows?
That was Out of the Pan, Sally Goldner, talking about the upcoming census and the inclusion of questions about gender and sexuality, but not variations in sex characteristics. You can, of course, hear more from Sally on Sundays from 12 till 1, or also on the 3CR website at 3cr.org.au/out of the pan. You're listening to the Monday Breakfast Show here on 3CR Community Radio. I really loved that point she made about cisgender people or straight people not having to prove themselves. I think that was such a huge point for me to hear when I first listened to the interview, because I think so much of our lives as queer people is spent just proving ourselves to the world. And so sometimes I just forget that straight people, cisgender people, people who aren't intersex just don't have to spend time proving themselves. I wonder what that is like. Anyway, we're now going to be listening to a short segment from back in May of this year from Uprise Radio, speaking about Palantir and their manifesto that they released in February, earlier this year, I think. We wanted to play it as more companies and governments, as particularly the Victorian government, continue to sign contracts with Palantir. The Guardian reported that the Victorian government has given some $20 million to Palantir since 2012, including a $9 million contract with Corrections Victoria, which expires in 2028. In February of this year, one part of the supermarket duopoly, Coles, signed a 3-year deal to use Palantir's technology, including facial recognition, across its stores, and I believe that extends to both Kmart and Bunnings as well. No, when you're walking, you know, when you're walking around Coles and you see those little screens that have like the red squares, that's I assume is Palantir's technology, like looking at your face. Really, really scary stuff to help them, you know, monitor quote unquote sales, or like, you know, crack down on people stealing from them. Anyway, so here is the segment from Uprise Radio.
Point number 9 I do like, though. We should show far more grace to those who have subjected themselves to public life. The eradication of any space for forgiveness and jettisoning of any tolerance for the complexities and contradictions of the human psyche may leave us with a cast of characters at the helm we will grow to regret.
Wow, that is poetic.
Yeah, that one, also this one feels like it's written by AI a little bit. I don't know why I'm getting that vibe from it. But I like the idea that it's someone who's in the public life who is constantly being scrutinized for all of his weird behavior, and he's trying to write like an objective thing saying, guys, can we please stop scrutinizing people?
It's giving me Robert Smith vibes.
Yeah. Just let people...
Just forgive.
Just forgive and move on. What? So I did something really bad in the past?
We're all just human.
Yeah. Have you guys ever thought about the fact that if you didn't let me personally be in power, that something bad might happen in the future that you would regret? You should think about that. Also, while we were off air, we were just going through some of the... collaborations that Palantir has in Australia. They have a big contract with Coles now and Rio Tinto.
And Westpac and the Future Fund has recently this year invested $100 million in shares.
So that's good to know that that we're, as a country, getting really deeply in bed with these these guys.
And honestly, from Coles, I see it. I feel like the amount of security... camera situation. There's shit talking to me when I go into the aisles now.
Yeah.
It's Palantir.
It's definitely going to build some big database of everyone. Like, shoplifting at Coles is going to get dangerous. I would say that. Palantir, I believe, off the top of my head, I know it's definitely a Lord of the Rings reference. I believe Palantir is the name of the orb the all-seeing eye orb that if you are trained, you can look into it and see, you know, find any information. You can see any part of the world. So it's they've named themselves after an all-seeing magical orb, I guess to be reassuring or
just... I guess I feel like it gives more context to the vibe of, like, citizens shouldn't have the option of having tech because they're not able to know how to use it properly, but us, the overlords who know how to use it, should have the reign supreme power over tech.
Yeah. Okay, I'm going to skip forward a little bit over some that are kind of good, but I do want to get to these, the juicier ones. Number 13, no other country in the history of the world has advanced progressive values more than this one. The United States is far from perfect, okay? But it is easy to forget how much more opportunity exists in this country for those who are not hereditary elites than in any other nation on the planet. So I'd like a little fact check on that. I'd like to see how much generational wealth impacts people's lives. I would. The fact that in my lifetime there have been two presidents of the United States whose last name have been Bush would lead me to believe that I think there maybe are hereditary elites who are running the country. I think that's happening, whether he wants to admit it or not.
Also, just the fact that the level of accountability to the United States complicity in colonialism and war crimes ongoing is just, we're not perfect.
Yeah, we're not. Look, it's a, that's, I love that.
That ask for forgiveness. Yeah,
that's their big line on the Iraq War, which I always
we're not think perfect.
Is strangely funny. They're just like, look, it was a mistake. It's just, it was a little mistake. It was a little oopsie.
A slip up.
It's no big deal. We accidentally killed 1 million people and destabilized the region and did untold damage to, you know, for the future. But it's, look, everyone makes mistakes. We all slip up sometimes. Sometimes you forget someone's birthday. Sometimes you launch a wholly unjustified war.
They both deserve forgiveness.
Yeah, yeah. Number 15 is a good one. The post-war neutering of Germany and Japan must be undone. The defanging of Germany was an overcorrection for which Europe is now paying a heavy price.
Can you define what defanging means?
I think they're talking about the fact that they were demilitarized. Like, Germany's military's been a lot weaker since World War II. And yeah, but I mean, also that Germany wasn't a country after World War II. Germany was split into two. And he's kind of glossing over that, but whatever, we'll move past that. And then also, yeah, Japan, much more famous. Like, Japan, I think constitutionally isn't allowed a military, which is why it's always weird that they do have a military. Like, it's like technically a police force or something.
It also just really reminds me of how the difference between Israel keeping all of its weapons and Hamas needing to demilitarize and the way that the controlling forces get to decide who gets access to any type of military, which is, it's never even.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the difference in this one being that Germany and Japan were both expansionist empires who started the World War II. Like, I think it was completely justified that Germany and Japan not be allowed to be militarized anymore. I think that was good. They should remain pacifist countries. They shouldn't be allowed to have militaries. Germany especially. Mm. They did both world wars. Mm. One and two were both Germany being too militarized and saying, why don't we just expand a little bit? So I think big fat goose egg to this one. No is my vote to remilitarizing Germany. I think Germany can sit this one out because if they do three world wars, I don't even think there should be a Germany anymore. I think that should be broken up into, used to, 200, 300 years ago, I can't remember when it was, before unification, that place was 500 different little tiny countries, and it should go back to that. That would look good on a map. It's a beautiful thing. If you think balkanization created a lot of countries, you should look at a map of what Germany used to look like. And that's what we could have again. Tiny, tiny little city states. And it was a better... it wasn't actually a better world. It was worse in many ways. But it'd be cooler on the map. That's all I'm going to say. Okay, well, moving on from that. Me saying that we should break up Germany.
Dissolve all borders.
Dissolve them all. Dissolve all of them. Except Yugoslavia, which I think they should put back together. All right. Well, anyway, point number 16, we should applaud those who attempt to build where the market has failed to act. The culture almost snickers at Musk's interest in
grand narrative. I was like, oh, wow, this is turning.
As if billionaires ought to simply stay in their lane of enriching themselves. Any curiosity or genuine interest in the value of what he has created is essentially dismissed, or perhaps lurks from beneath a thinly veiled scorn. So we should applaud we should applaud Elon Musk for everything, I guess. We shouldn't undermine him.
Yeah, it's also giving like green capitalism vibes. Being like, if you can make a buck off literally anything, you should go do it. Even if it's still going to continue to destroy the earth overall, you should still be able to do it.
That is
Elon And we should Musk's pat you thing. On the back.
Yeah. I mean, it is really interesting that he went from like a big liberal hero for like all of his electric cars and solar panels and stuff. And now he's trying to switch teams and be...
Go to Mars? Like,
go to Mars. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. The Mars thing, I think, is... It's a beautiful thing that space has become. There's no frontier left for capitalism to colonize. And so now we must look to the heavens. We must look upwards into the infinite abyss.
Oh, my God. I have a request. I think we've been really good not talking about Thomas Sankara.
Yep.
But he actually had a really awesome quote that referenced aliens.
Oh, yeah.
And I would just love to read that out. It says... Bikina has proposed and continues to propose that at least 1% of the colossal sums of money sacrificed to the search for cohabitation with other stars and planets be used, by way of compensation, to finance projects to save trees and lives. We have not abandoned hope that a dialogue with the Martians might lead to the reconquest of Eden, but in the meantime, Earthlings that we are, we also have the right to reject a choice limited simply to the alternatives of hell or purgatory.
Unreal.
Unreal.
You guys are going to love the episode on Thomas Sankara. What a
and
guy.
And we're just going to keep drip feeding you.
He was the best. He was so cool. He was really hot. We watched, we did research by watching YouTube videos together the other day, which was maybe the least productive research I've ever done in my life. But a lot of old footage of him, and both of us just kept commenting. I mean, it's incredible. You don't get attractive leaders like that anymore. Or ever. I don't think... I think that might be a once in history moment to have someone like that. Well, I'll just read this one last. We'll finish up with this. It's point number 21, which I think really, is a great example of where the zeitgeist is at in Silicon Valley. Point number 21, some cultures have produced vital advances, others remain dysfunctional and regressive. All cultures are now equal. Criticism and value judgments are forbidden. Yet this new dogma glosses over the fact that certain cultures, and indeed subcultures, have produced wonders, others have proven middling and worse, regressive and harmful. So, I guess I mean, it's very coded. It's so coded that I don't even really know what he's, like, who specifically he's talking about.
Yeah, also saying we're all equal, but we're all different.
Well, no, he's saying that now, you know, now we have to pretend everyone's equal. But obviously, we're not. Yeah, I don't know. I think it really does just split down, like, West versus everyone else mentality. And yeah,
it's also just giving me... like marijuana paranoia vibes.
Okay, yeah. I kind of see that. I do think no one talks about the fact that 10 years ago they were all writing articles about how everyone in Silicon Valley was taking psychedelic mushrooms and acid all day.
And I feel like we're kind of starting to see it now in this manifesto.
They kind of stopped talking about that, and now all of these people think that they've like discovered, they've like reinvented racism.
When I was new to Melbourne, I found a Food Not Bombs flyer on the road, and I had like this fist with a carrot, and carrots are my favourite vegetable. Yeah, I think they were asking for help doing stuff, and I got in touch.
We, I guess, rescue food
that would otherwise go to waste.
I like the aspect of sharing food and not making anyone feel obligated to pay anything for it.
We make a real point at Food Not Bombs of involving
everyone who wants to be involved in whichever part they want to be involved in.
For more information, go to fnbmelb.noblogs.org. Food Not Bombs is a 3CR supporter. Food Not
Bombs. You're listening to the Monday Breakfast Show on 3CR. We're now going to be bringing you an excerpt of the first episode of the new podcast by the Center Against Racial Profiling. This series is called The People's Record. They had their first launch of this series 2 days ago on Saturday, and in this episode, Adil is joined by Ahmed Musab Reem, Ilo Diaz, Crystal McKinnon, Sharandev Singh, Tamar Hopkins to explore growing up and community in the flats, first experiences of policing, histories of racialized police violence in so-called Australia, and traditions of community resistance. You can listen to the rest of this episode and the first three episodes of this series at 3cr.org.au/thepeoplesrecord. Stay tuned.
This episode contains descriptions of police violence and racial profiling. Please take care while listening.
I'll say there's one example. It was, this was around COVID. This was when the COVID had the curfew, and we were not even over curfew. I think we were like maybe 5 minutes over curfew, sitting in a park. All of us got Maccas, you know, we're sitting down eating. Next thing we know, two cars show up, flashing lights on, and they're charging full speed, just running at us. And, you know, at that time we were young, we were still 14, you know, we were very young. So I think half the kids ran because they got scared. They're just like, nah. Some of the kids have experienced that before and they're just like, nah, I don't want to experience it again. And this one kid, he didn't experience this yet. So he stood still thinking that was the right thing to do. And even just standing still, he got tackled straight away. And he had three officers on him all over just because of the curfew time. Basically just jumping on top of you and just falling on top of you, and then you'd have more officers doing that. And I was probably the oldest one there, so the kid was 13 or 12 at the time.
This is The People's Record, and I'm Idil Ali. I'm public housing raised here in Nam, and in this podcast, I want to tell you the inside story of our world, our struggle, and our resistance. I will be speaking with community members, activists, academics, lawyers, and allies about the realities of our lives in public housing and what it means to be policed in our own home. Over 5 episodes, you're going to hear a pattern, a story of our containment, an attempt at erasing us, and how we refuse to disappear. This is episode 1. What name am I using for you, actually?
Yeah, what do you want to use?
What do you want to use?
Whatever. Whatever's easy for you to remember. Because you're going to be, you know, applying to things. I'm not going to be saying my own name.
Yeah. No, but I feel like you should choose your own alias.
Ahmed.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah? All right, Ahmed.
Is that okay?
Yeah.
No, you don't like it. Choose something else.
I can be Ahmed. I'm Ahmed.
Ahmed from Carlton chose a pseudonym, and Musab from Richmond did the same. Because when you grow up black in public housing in Melbourne, your name is data, your face is data, your family, your friends, your interests are all data. And that data gets collected, stored, and used, and not in your best interest. So even something as simple as doing an interview, you have to calculate the risk.
When you grow up and you're so traumatized and you know so much things about these people, they really are, like, I can tell you, like, a police officer, when he's not even a police, like, he's off duty just by the way he walks, because the way he's used to holding his belt and certain gestures that he does with his shoulder, certain things, I can just tell you, hey, this guy, but I shouldn't know these things. Do you know what I mean? And it's trauma, you know?
I'm probably going to start us off with a question. Oh, name. What do you want me to use?
Musab.
Musab.
Musab Khamis.
Can I say it? How do you want me to say it? Musab?
Yeah.
Okay.
Marhab. My name is Musab. Musab Khamis.
How old were you when you were having your first experiences of policing?
13. on a tram. We were coming back from the city.
Mm.
And we all hopped out the tram. I think we had a lot of us there. It was maybe like 15,
mm-hmm.
15 of us. We just came back from like, I think it was called a gab.
Oh, what?
A gab.
A gab.
I don't know what it's called. A gab, like a little party.
Oh, a gathering.
Like, yeah.
Get they out. They say
gab for short. Okay. Like, it's weird. But
back in my day, we said haps, but okay.
No, but we all hopped at the tram, and two cop cars came in front of the tram. And at that time, we were still young. We didn't understand that, like,
what's about to happen.
Yeah. So I remember one of our mates waved at them. I kid you not, waved at them. And the next thing they did, you just saw four doors open, so two doors from each car, and cops screaming at us saying, get on the ground. And at that point, like, they're just aiming stuff at us, so we're just like, whoa. So
what stuff?
To be honest, I couldn't tell you what I'm not gonna say it was, but
yeah,
it looked like a gun.
Mm-hmm.
So half of us rose up, and the other half ran, because it was just like, and our heads, we were thinking we're about to get shot for no reason. So we ran, and next thing I remember was two kids almost got hit by a car, by a police vehicle. Mm-hmm. So the police vehicle drove onto the pedestrian way and tried hitting the kids. The kids got passed, and they got tackled straight away by officers around the corner.
Mm-hmm.
All the roads were blocked off by the vans, and they were just full on chasing us, just tackling everyone. And when they rounded us up, they accused us of a crime that happened.
All 15 of you?
All 15 of us. They said we were the suspects. And we literally told them we had nothing to do with it. And my thoughts were, at the time, that was when we were getting onto social media. So we started seeing what was happening in America.
Mm-hmm.
So our immediate thought was just, because of our skin color, that's what we're going through. Because it was crazy that was happening to us. It got worse. Now there wasn't just targeting of what your color was, but of your status, where you lived. And it became a thing where they thought that if you lived in the flats or lived in public housing, that you were just a thug or a criminal. And sooner than later, everyone started copying the same thing. Everyone started going through the exact same thing. Yeah, to be honest, it confuses me a lot. It really confuses me a lot, because I'll say for years, we just copped it straight. It's just to the point that if we saw them, we just knew to walk away or try and get away. But even then, you'd have a car in front of your face with the flashing lights, and next thing you know, you're getting searched for no reason without a probable cause. It just brings it back, like, we never understood that wasn't right, you know? We just thought that was just a daily thing that we had to go to. And I feel like we got so used to it, to the point where we knew the procedure. Like, we got stopped and we knew what we had to do. We knew, you have to stand, legs apart, stretch your arms out, wait to get searched, let them go through your bag. And it's just, I don't know, for years we just went through it. And I never, like, realizing when I grew up that wasn't right. I don't want my siblings to go through it. I don't want, like, my little cousins to go through the same thing we went through.
Mm.
It wasn't fair on us. I feel like it really shaped a lot of people.
Yeah.
It really changed a lot of people, you know?
The story that Musab shares is the same as so many. The procedure, the rite of passage, the coming of age of boys into men in the flats, an initiation into black adulthood in Australia. To be able to speak about policing, we need to first speak about who we are as the people being policed. Most of our parents came here as young couples seeking a home and safety for their futures. We're the first generation to have our youth here.
Thank you so much, Ahmed, for coming in. I wanted to ask, first and foremost, what was it like growing up in Carlton?
Carlton's had its times. Growing up, it was really good. Like, it was really community-based. It was really community-orientated. It was really nice place to grow up, I reckon.
What made it nice? Like, what made you feel like it was community oriented?
A lot of things. The camps we went to together, and like the different primary schools that we had all in the region. the different ethnicities. They were all like neighbours and things like that.
Reem grew up in Flemington and North Melbourne, just a few kilometres from Ahmed.
I grew up in both North Melbourne and Flemington. So it was like having a massive family and just being around a big family. Like everyone knew each other and everyone knew what was happening to each other. So if any big thing happened or any like both positive and negative thing was happening, we were like so in each other's lives. You know, like you have those big Italian families you see on TV. It was like that, but like bigger. But also it was like we're all from different countries. Predominantly East African, Horn of Africans, like Somali, Eritrean, Ethiopian, and so forth. But there was like Vietnamese and people from Timor and like, and many other, like El Salvadorian as well. So it was like living there was like feeling, it was very, I felt safe. And I felt safe because I felt it wasn't just my family looking over me, it's like the community looking over me. And I felt I had a really like, good childhood because of it, you know?
This is Daniel.
Flemington was home. So basically grew up in housing commission estates, so about 20 stories high. We had, all the public open space, the parks downstairs were sort of like our backyard. So it felt like a very tight-knit sort of community because we all sort of, we're first generation African Australians. We moved there and we're still finding our feet. So it was a very interesting, sometimes confusing, sometimes very adventurous kind of upbringing.
20 story towers or 12, high rise public housing in the inner city, the park downstairs, that was our backyard, and the place where everything happened. And from the windows above, the aunties could see everything. And they were definitely keeping note.
I feel like one of my favourite memories growing up in Carlton. Do you remember before the buildings had like any locks and stuff? Like before the buildings had any passes to get in?
Yeah, yeah.
And like I just remember 510, like the 44 home tree. And I remember one time all of your age group, like you guys, you're a few years older than me, right? Like,
yeah.
I just remember one time all the older kids were there. We were there. The younger kids were there. And we were like, you know, last one to the 44 home tree. And everyone knows what the 44 home tree. We're all running to it, all of that. And then after we played a few rounds, the older kids were like, okay, we're going to play cops and robbers. And like, I think what I loved about it was like, even though we were younger, we were still allowed to play with you guys. So then you guys, and then even the way you guys split the teams, like it's all fair. Like, you know, the 100%. Captains are the same age and they're just choosing from different age groups. And
that's how it was in Carlton. It was like, that was the thing with everything in sport as well. Like we used to create our own games.
Yeah, knockout.
Like you said, like the 44 home tree, like you see, like that tree is just like, we all knew what it was. You know, that was the tree. You come out first one to that tree, last 15, only 15 people can play. If it's too many for certain things, otherwise the game's never going to end.
Yeah.
And it was like certain rules that everyone knew how to, like, you know,
yeah,
go by and things like that.
The 44 home tree. If you didn't grow up in Carlton, that means nothing to you. But if you did, you know exactly what tree I'm talking about. Life in the flats had its own rhythm. The times of the year when the whole community came alive in specific ways.
Personally, my favourite part of growing up was like summer nights, everybody comes downstairs, all the mums have pictures of like, you know, cordial and things, and like it was such a community space, and like your parents didn't have to be down because some parents were down, so you were all able to, like all the kids were able to go downstairs. And I think that at the same time, although summer was my favourite time, we knew that things would happen every single summer. I want to ask you about Ramadan soccer.
Ramadan soccer. So Ramadan soccer used to kind of be like, it's like the World Cup. Like that's what it was, like for real. It's like the World Cup that comes around every year for a month, you know. That month, the best players in Victoria, sometimes even other states, come if they can get into a team, that is, as well. It's really hard back in the days as well. It's prestige. It was elite. It starts around 10 o'clock and it goes until about 2:30 in the morning.
Yeah.
And to be honest with you, it works absolutely perfect.
Yeah, because people finish praying Tarawih. Finish
Tarawih, eating, everything's settled, you know, you've had your chats, your parents, everything's just...
This is what the flats gave us. Not just...
It's time to do your census. Hearing from everyone helps to plan for the future of our communities. You can do it online, on paper, or with help from the census team. In the census, every answer matters. Visit census.abs.gov.au or call 1800 181 227 for information and support. Authorised by the Australian Bureau of Statistics, Canberra.
A 3CR supporter.
You're listening to the Monday Breakfast Show on 3CR. We were just listening to an excerpt of the first episode of the new podcast by the Centre Against Racial Profiling, with the series being called The People's Record. You can listen to the rest of that episode and the first three episodes of that series at 3cr.org.au/The People's Record. And last up on the show, we are joined live by Karen and Kelly from the Action Network and Flat Out. Kelly is a First Nations artist and writer with lived experience of the Victorian prison system. She's an advocate for women and social justice, drawing on her experience to challenge systemic harm. Kelly is currently writing her first book and is a proud member of Flat Out. And Karen has been a long-term activist advocating for social justice, is the executive officer of Flat Out, and is a former lawyer. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm great. How are you guys going?
Yeah, I'm really good. Happy to be here.
Amazing.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
Of course. Thanks for coming on the show. Could you start off by telling me a bit about your work in Flat Out and your work within the community?
Shall I go first, Kel, or would you like to?
You know what? Like, I feel like you can kick it off.
Okay. Hi, I'm Karen. I work at Flat Out. Flat Out is a community organisation that supports women, trans and gender diverse people to get out and stay out of prison. And we have been going for about 38 years now. We have always been concerned about the conditions that women, trans and gender diverse people live in the prisons, and particularly about the overuse of solitary confinement. And we're, especially concerned at the moment about this law that is being introduced to remove the right to at least 1 hour out of cell per day in the fresh air.
And I think that's probably a really good segue into it, Karen. Like, I am formerly incarcerated, and Karen and Flat Out have supported me through all of that. And it was tough. My experience is that when you are in prison and the little things like going outside, getting fresh air, it resets you, it clears mental health. And so I think it's so important that we're here today, because if we take away that, what's next? What are we going to take away next? You know, right to air, like breathe, you know. It's a serious thing that we're dealing with.
Yeah.
So I guess that's, leading us into the topic that we came to discuss, which is that we're having a protest on the steps of Parliament on Wednesday against this bill that the government's introduced to remove the right to 1 hour, at least a minimum of 1 hour out of cell per day in Victorian prisons.
Mm, definitely, yeah. You know, I was just thinking this morning, Karen and Hannah, I was thinking this morning about, like, you know, over COVID, we had this big thing about people being locked in their homes, and, like, and we're still kind of seeing the effects of that. Like, some of our kids don't want to return back to school, and there's still a lot of things that we don't know about that. And I got thinking about, like, if we think about people in prison, and we think about them being in this, like, lockdown conditions, you know, in cells, but without access to telephones, without access to family and phones and internet and all of those things, it's exactly the same sort of environment. And, I mean, take away the luxuries of being at home, but these are the sorts of things. We don't know what the long-term effect is, you know, of taking away this right.
Yeah, Kelly, what you've told us about what it's like to live in those conditions has really brought to the you know, to the fore, the reality for people and what it does to people. And this rally on Wednesday, it's being organised by Flat Out, but also in alliance with a bunch of other organisations, including the Victorian Aboriginal Legal Service and Human Rights Legal Centre and the Federation of Community Legal Centres, because we all know that this kind of legislation is just going to entrench what's been happening at the prison for the last few years, which is more and more lockdowns, more and more segregation, less access to education and programs, family visits, therapy, counselling, all the things that make it easier to survive in prison are being stripped away. And now there's legislation saying that that's okay.
Yeah, allowing the torture to continue by not even giving you basic human rights. It's really frustrating, isn't it, Karen? I feel like when we talk about the effects of prison, and like I've been out, you know, over a year and a half now, but I still have these long-term effects of isolation, you know, conditions that aren't fit for human beings, you know, and it's I can't stress enough the damage this is going to cause to people. And I mean, where does it stop?
Yeah, it's such an issue for people to be able to get their lives together again after release. If people are like leave prison broken, trying to, you know, get the things together that you need to live a life, a home, a job, an income, those sorts of things, it's just really hard, and it just increases the chance of people going back inside and having sort of long-term issues establishing a safe life with their family. It's like the opposite of what, you know, we're told about what prisons are supposed to do in terms of, you know, cutting the cycle and rehabilitating people and giving people the skills to do what they need to do to build a life. It's actually breaking people down to the point where they have no chance.
Yeah, and I was, you know, what just came to my mind is interesting, and this is like, but it's like constantly beating your dog and then wondering why your dog bites people. It's like it's the same theory. It's like, why would you constantly treat a human being so poorly and then expect them to come out and be productive members of society? Like, it's just wild that people think that.
Yeah, like the opposite of community safety. All this stuff is supposed to be about community safety, and right, it's actually just creating a lot more risk and harm for people.
So, for context for listeners, could you remind me a bit about... So, the Victorian government is proposing amendments to the Corrections Act. Can you tell me more about what these amendments are and a bit more about how they will affect people in prisons and what the minimum standards for people in custody currently are as well?
Sure. Well, so the Corrections Act has a whole section which deals with prisoners' rights. It's actually headed prisoners' rights. And it includes what we've been talking about, which is that there is a right to a minimum of at least 1 hour a day in the fresh air. And recently there was a case where a man had been refused that right for a very long time, as is, you know, the case across the prison system. There are so many people being held in management, in solitary confinement and in lockdown and not getting their 1 hour out of cell. And a man who had access to legal help, which is quite rare because most people in prison don't have the money for that, but this particular man did. He took it to the Supreme Court, and the court held that his rights had been breached under the Corrections Act. And so the response of the government is, rather than to make sure that that right is enforced across the prison system, they have introduced a bill which actually says that that right is not actually a right. It doesn't need to be provided if it's not practical for the prison system to do it. And, you know, across the system they're saying at the moment it's not practical because there are so many people flooding into the system because of the changes to the bail laws, that they, you know, they can't cope with the numbers and they're just locking people down
without access to that. So that's what this bill does. Instead of, the government responding by saying we need to work out how we can make sure that we deliver this human right, they're saying we get rid of this human right. I guess what we're wanting to say on Wednesday, we're meeting at 12:45 on the steps of Parliament to ask that the government withdraws this bill. Apart from the particular issue of access to fresh air, what this does is really just put all of human rights, the whole charter, a Victorian Charter of Human Rights, at risk if the government can just get rid of a right if they think it's not easy for them to deliver it. So we're really concerned that this is just a precedent for human rights in Victoria, that if a court finds that the government has breached the human right, then the government will respond by just getting rid of that right.
It's so counterproductive now. Like, I've just listened to you. I mean, I know what the deal is, but listening to you say that, in my mind, like, red flags are just up, and it's, like, so counterproductive that we think, hey, there's been a serious breach of this person's human rights. You know what? Let's just take out the whole right itself, and then that, you know, it's solved. Like, how wild is it we're even having this conversation?
So what is the Victorian government's reasoning for this? Is it because it's, you know, quote unquote, like, logistically bad for running prisons, or like, yeah, what is their, you know, at least what they're saying their reasoning is for this?
Look, it's very similar to all of the government actions recently that have impacted people in prison, which is, oh, these people are the worst of the worst. In the debate in Parliament on this bill, there was even people saying, you know, these people should get nothing. Why do we even have these human rights? And I guess what they use as, you know, as with the bail laws, is saying this is about rapists and murderers, the worst of the worst. They should get nothing. Sort of appealing to that law and order mentality, rather than the reality of prisons, which is that the vast majority of people who spend time in prison, are not there, and this is particularly the case for women, trans and gender diverse people, are not there for violent offences, are there for a relatively short period of time on remand, oftentimes not sentenced to more time or to time in prison. There's a churn of people, particularly Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people, people with disabilities and brain injuries, people from very poor, poverty-stricken backgrounds and with family violence and violence as a child in their background. So, the reasoning that is often used in the mass media and by government about why to have these clampdowns on people in prison, is just sensationalist and inaccurate arguments about, oh, this will stop violent crime.
Mm. And so how can people fight against human rights abuses within prison systems?
Well, the first thing we'd ask people to do is come on Wednesday, 12:45, on the steps of Parliament and bring placards and banners. Look, it's really hard in Victoria. There's a bipartisan agreement between the government and the opposition. We've had support from the Greens and from the crossbenchers, but both of the parties are using law and order politics to try to win the election. And that's the way across Australia, across the world, these kind of these attacks on people in prison are used as a way of winning elections. I think the most important thing is that people educate themselves, come along to the rally, get involved in organisations like the Aboriginal Legal Service and ourselves and Human Rights. We have to build up this movement outside of the two major parties, because they both agree that this is a great way for them to win elections.
Mm. And that kind of brings us to the end of the show. Do you two have anything else you want to add before I let you go?
Yeah, I think come down and support us. I mean, there's a whole range of different people, you know, involved. Like, we've got formerly incarcerated people right up to human rights lawyers, so all sorts of... And I think coming down and supporting us, you're not only saying that, you know, this is not okay, But it also stops the government from just making up the rules as they go or taking the rules away as they go. Under no circumstances should we allow them that type of power.
And do you want to remind listeners one more time about how to get to where the rally is and how else people can get involved?
Yeah, sure. 12:45 on the steps of Parliament on Spring Street this coming Wednesday, the 12th of August. Also, just get on to Flat Out's Instagram or Facebook or our website, and all the information is there.
Great. Thank you both so much for coming onto the show today, and I'll see you both on Wednesday.
Great. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
That was Karen and Kelly from Flat Out speaking about the upcoming rally, which is happening on Wednesday, the 12th of August at 12:45 at Parliament Steps, fighting against the amendments to the Correction Act, which will be trying to remove the right of people in prison from having at least 1 hour of fresh air outside. And before that, we were listening to a segment from the first episode of the new podcast by the Centre Against Racial Profiling, with the series being called The People's Record. You can listen to the rest of that episode and the first half of the series at 3cr.org.au/The People's Record. And before that, we were listening to a segment from Uprise Radio about Palantir's manifesto, and Palantir being sus. And before that, we were listening to an episode, a segment from yesterday's episode of Out of the Pan, where Sally Goldner was talking about the upcoming census and the inclusion of gender and sexuality, but not variations in sex characteristics. And we started off the show with a segment of Wing Beats Per Minute, which was all about flowering eucalyptus gums. Stay tuned for Women on the Line. I'll see you next week.
Bye.
Bye.
3CR Breakfast would like to thank the New International Bookshop, Melbourne's radical bookstore and venue, for their financial support of this program. You can find Nibs opposite reception in the Lygon Street wing of Trades Hall Carlton. You can buy books online and keep up to date with upcoming events at nibs.org.au.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.